Accession number 19772, Real 2.
Jim Farron, Real 2. Did you have any, were there any incidents on the way up to Seoul?
No, nothing major. It's mostly at night time, so there weren't a lot of bystanders. I think the train had wooden seats, and it was uncomfortable. We couldn't strip off, take our shoes off or anything. It was just, we slept as we were. And the nearest thing I've seen to that train is the one in Benidorm called the Lemon Express, which also has wooden seats. But it has tape music coming through. Goes up the side of the coast from Benidorm. And there's free champagne on the way back.
So what happened to you once you got to Seoul?
Basically, we were in reserve for a few days, nothing more. The rifle companies, as they call them, were probably given more intensive training. It was open ground, and I think that they would have to be more aware of what they could and couldn't do as regards moving forward through open ground, where in training you make a mistake, you get away with it. But they needed more intensive training for the few days while we were there. We as machine gunners had to dig a gun pit. There were two guns in a section, so we had to dig two gun pits. And that was before we actually dug any accommodation. So we had to scavenge for something to put on the roof. Hadn't got to be on the skyline, but it's got to be near enough the skyline, and it had to conform with the contours. But all this was before we could dig accommodation. On the ferry going out to Korea, we were issued with winter clothing, and we were issued with two sleeping bags, a large one and a slightly smaller one, and two good blankets which wrapped around the inner sleeping bag before we went into the outer sleeping bag. And we slept very well. And waking up in the morning, there was frost all over the outer sleeping bag from the breath while he'd been sleeping. And we were told that that night was the coldest night for 50 years, or whether it was or whether it wasn't, nobody could confirm it, but we never felt the cold. We were wrapped up. There was a rum ration, similar to what the Navy got, and it was the same good quality rum. And it was as required, but up to 20 tots a month. The sergeant was in charge of that. So that helped keep up the cold. You have a tot of rum before you get into bed. Nothing woke you.
But you were a teetotaler, you
said? I was a teetotaler at the time. Probably mean I never bought around before then, but We did a guard one night. Somebody had to be on guard all the time. And it was either a case of one man doing an hour and a quarter or two men doing 2.5 hours. But it varied to how we felt at that particular time. And one night, the sergeant had gone off on a course. And the corporal was in charge. So he let us go down to doing the 1.25 hours. Two of us, Dixon from Birkenhead and myself, were doing the first 2.5 hours between us. And we had a tot of rum. But we hadn't had rum for about 5 or 6 nights before that. The sergeant hadn't issued it. We couldn't argue with him. And Corporal Quick, his name was Carl Quick, he said, "You're on first stag?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you can have 2 tots. So that was good. We both had 2 tots. And we put our parkas on and stood in a trench looking out to the valley. Nothing much ever happened, but that's what we had to do. There's a telephone there connecting us to platoon headquarters. And the sweat was tripping us with that warm. And we had been able to purchase via the Naffy a Japanese beer, a sake, rice beer, and it was quite tasty. So we had 2 tots of rum, started sweating, had a bottle of a sake to cool us down. And I think if there'd been an attack that night, we'd have won medals because we were past caring. We had our faculties working, but we were just so happy. Or merry, if you like, but not staggering. It was just, we were content with the world around us that particular night.
What do you remember happening next?
Oh no, we just stayed there. Nothing happened on the night. As I say, it's the story goes that when Bill Speakman in the King's Own Scottish Borderers won his VC, he'd been drinking. Don't know how much he'd been drinking, but as well as firing his weapon, he was throwing empty bottles at them as they were coming towards his position. But that's a story I could not confirm, but I wouldn't dispute it.
So that was your first stag, was it?
The first stag of any event, sort of thing. Around about that time, we used to get papers. We used to get a new sheet printed by the battalion, but about things that are happening at home. But the newspaper we used to get was the Stars and Stripes, which is an American newspaper, complete newspaper, and we had several copies of that. And we read in that an American soldier in Korea was asleep when he should have been on stag, and he got 10 years in the stockade or whatever they put them, 10 years. And a couple of nights after that, I was woken up to do one of the middle stags. And whoever called me just woke me and said, you're on, or something to that effect. And then went back to his bunker, and I fell asleep. Well, for a while there was no stack. I should have been on. I was so tired, for some reason or other. I just didn't make it. And the sergeant, he woke up in the night, came out of his bunker, saw nobody on stack, and woke me up. And I got a severe telling off, but it didn't go any further than that. But it was in the back of my mind all the time about this American getting 10 years.
Whereabouts were you at the time? In the front line?
Yeah.
Do you know the name of the place?
Initially we were on a hill called 217. Or 227. They were next to each other. They were on the south side of the Sami Chun Valley. Nothing out of the ordinary happened there, except that one night we were expected to dig a gun position at the bottom of the next hill, which I think was 227, and the enemy were on top of it, and it wasn't a particularly, it wasn't a mountain by any means, but we had to dig silently to put a gun position at the bottom of a hill, which is not what a machine gun's for. It should be able to cover a wider area than shooting uphill at anybody. They could roll stones down and destroy the gun. But we did it. Nobody ever told us why.
Was a gun moved into that position?
No, just the gun pit. Had no time to cover it.
Was it easier to dig?
It was at that time. The ground was frozen for months, basically. Trying to dig in, the first inch and a half or 2 inches were white. The mud was white because the frost had gone right into the ground. So once you'd got through the frost, the rest of the digging was easy.
What is the next incident that you remember?
Not a lot. The talks were going on in Panmunjom at the time, so there was very little activity. The rifle companies were sending patrols out to a hill called 169, which is the other side of the valley. And we were there basically to cover them. During the daytime, we had a lot of reference points marked down, possibly 200 yards apart ahead, and we'd set these down. I would have to find out the angle of the gun to reach those particular reference points. And we had a chart made out. Probably 10 or 12 reference points. And if a patrol was going out towards one of them, our guns would be laid two reference points further on, sort of thing, to give them cover and fire, but only if it was asked for. If it's just a patrol to see what was going on, they did it quietly and we just stood too till the time we were told to stand down. As I said, the talks were going on in Panmunjom, so there was no serious attacks.
Would you be asked to go out on patrol yourself?
No, not as a machine gun. We stayed where we were. I suppose if there'd been an attack, we'd have still have to stay where we were, even if we were overrun, sort of thing. Nobody ever mentioned that possibility with us covered the rifle companies. We did move back at one. We didn't move the guns, but we moved back to dig reserve positions about 10 or 12 miles south, I suppose, in the event of an attack. We'd have somewhere to run to, and the positions were already dug. And that was the positions, they all had code names, but this was the Teal positions. And it was then on the unit news sheet that a horse called Teal was running in the Derby.
We had the Grand National.
It was National, was it? Anyway, that's Teal won it. Because we had no access to bookies or anything, but it was Teal position who were digging them. And I couldn't swim, well, I still can't swim, but while we were there, we were splashing about near the Jim River, and there's a submerged 50-gallon drum about 15 yards out, and somebody suggested that we went out to it and to see how many of us could stand on the top of this drum, which is only about less than 2 feet across. I think five of us managed it, and the next person who went out to it kicked it, so I went towards the middle of the river, and I couldn't swim. And a lad called Fred Banks, who had come from the Gloucesters, but had not been involved in their actions, he transferred from the Gloucesters to the Welsh. He knew I couldn't swim, and he got hold of me, tried to save me. And I hit him with my elbow, because I didn't know what was going on. Right across his face. And he still kept hold of me, and he saved my life then. Because you could stand on the banks of the MGM and look and see currents going seven different ways. It was a treacherous river. But we were clowning around. I wasn't clowning around, but I was a victim of somebody who was. That's the nearest I got to being killed. We had R&R leave in Japan. Some also went to Incheon, which was in Korea. That was a 3-day leave. But the 5-day R&R in Japan, where we went, and we got out of our uniforms, and we got new uniforms, and we slept in beds with sheets, and we had waitress service, and they'd do anything that was required. They'd iron your uniforms if you wanted, wash shirts, they'd do all sorts. And that was at Ebisu camp in Japan, Tokyo. And it was a former submarine base. But we went out, we flew out on a Dakota on the last day of April. And our positions were shelled. We didn't know about it, but that was the first action I would have seen. Because six members of the unit were killed, including the corporal in our platoon, called Corporal Richardson. And we didn't know about it till later in the day. We had a good night's sleep. We met at Tokyo airport with the Salvation Army tea van, and I thought that was a nice touch. We had a good night's sleep, change of clothing, clean sheets on the bed, and then we went for a walk around Tokyo, which happened to be May the 1st. We were in Korea fighting the communists, and then we were walking around Tokyo, which had its first year of communists, and they were baiting us to a certain extent, not particularly the group I was with. Never saw any of it, but it was a communist day, and it had the little march around Tokyo, and we were coming back to camp about 6 o'clock or whatever for tea, and the guard on the gate said, it's May Day, the day for communists. If you come in, you can't go out again. You don't have to come in. While you're out, you can stay out, but we're not allowed to let anybody out after that because of reprisals. So we just stayed in.
What did this baiting consist of?
Well, just like telling us we're not going to live long and things like that. We were told that in Singapore. Well, I wasn't one of the platoon members, was told that. We all split up and went on shore leave in Singapore. And when we all got back to the ship, it said that one fellow was going to buy something and they were bartering. Anyway, he didn't win his barter, and whoever was selling the stuff said, you're going to die. You were on the way to Korea, but this is someone in Singapore who probably wanted to sell something and couldn't make enough money on it, so retaliated with that, whether it was a genuine threat or whether it was just something to, as a passing shot. Nobody ever knew, but I don't think we were that popular anyway.
Why not?
It's just a feeling, I suppose. I say it, my doubts came from this man who was told he was going to die, sort of thing. To say, well, not good looking what you're doing, sort of thing. You shouldn't be there, so you're going to be killed.
What else did you do in Tokyo?
Well, we, there were five of us. Nobody else from my platoon, but there was five of us from the company went out there, and we stayed together. And we met up with three girls, so the five of us and three girls, and we were going around and having different drinks in different bars, and you had to take your shoes off before you entered these places. Anyway, these were prostitutes, and I wasn't really interested. I had my arm around one of them, but it was a friendship thing. And they were after money. Didn't have a lot of money, but we had enough for them if required. But the five of us and three girls, so I said, I'm going back to the camp. And another fella came with me. And the three others stayed with the three girls. And off we went. When they eventually got back to the camp, they said the military police came in, and they said this place is out of bounds. So they were told that there was no notices to say this particular bar was out of bounds. And then the police told them, if it's not out of bounds, there will be a notice to say it's not out of bounds. Otherwise, everywhere is out of bounds. But we did a lot of, crammed a lot into 5 days, but it was just basically sightseeing and having a drink and whatever. Before I went on leave, we were then in a different position in the line on a hill called 355. And it was called Little Gibraltar. And it stuck out above everything else around it. We already had gun positions on top of that hill, left by the previous unit. And any supplies, any ammunition and water were carried up the hill by the trailer with a long cable that went to the top of the hill and down again and tied round the back end of a 1500 weight, which had the back two wheels missing and was jacked up. So they started the engine and the hoist started working and the trailer went up the hill. So it saved an awful lot of carrying. Very few had to carry stuff up the hill. Just waiting for the our turn to use the trailer. Basic trailer that the army used at the time. Let's say the 1500, which never went anywhere. It was jacked up just for the sole purpose of hoisting stuff up the hill. So before I went on leave, we'd had a lot of rain, and the cookhouse was on the reverse slope of this 355, and the toilets were halfway down 355 at the reverse slope. And I was going down there one day after a lot of rain, and I found a pair of trousers, American trousers, nobody in them, but just sticking out of the mud. So I pulled them out and I went through the pockets, and there's a wallet with a man's ID, a lot of photographs of his wife, I presume. There's a dollar in the wallet, and there's a Ronson lighter. So I gave these to one of the fellows who was going to Japan before, and they said, find an American embassy, return them. I don't know why this fellow would have lost a pair of trousers, you know, complete with his personal effects. The man's name was Jimmy Jumper, and he was of Indian extraction. So his ID...